Special Testimonies for Ministers and Workers, Number 4. Avondale, Currumbong, New South Wales, Australia. September 1, 1895. Dear Brother and Sister Blank, Brother Blank laid out before me the plans for meetings to be held for weeks in different places among those who know the truth. Doubtless, some who have newly come to the faith would be benefited, but I know you are not on the right track. Some of those called together will no doubt have their faith strengthened and confirmed, but this work is not bearing the message of warning to those who are still in darkness and error, who know not the truth. Time is passing. The perils of the last days are upon us, and how many will say to us in the last great day, when every man shall receive according to his works, "Why have you not warned us? You have not told us those things that we should have known." Christ says, "I came not to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Let our ministers go forth weighted with the solemn message of warning. When men have had every advantage to obtain a knowledge of the truth, how shall plans be laid to keep our laborers from the work of saving souls in the darkness of error? The time is short. Let the message of warning be given clear and distinct. The Lord is coming to execute judgment upon all who obey not the gospel. Enoch in his day sounded the proclamation of the coming of Christ and the execution of judgment upon the unrighteous. And we now see the fulfillment of Enoch's prophecy concerning the great wickedness that should abound. But these who have the light are the very ones commissioned of God to make constantly aggressive warfare. As the inquiry shall be made, watchmen, what of the night? The faithful message is to be heard in response, "The morning cometh, and also the night." The influence of truth is too much restricted. Let men who know the truth be urged to communicate truth to those who are in darkness. Many are satisfied with a view of truth, but they have not yet stepped into their place to communicate that which they have received. God has let men feel the power of truth, but they are not all doing their appointed work in seeking to save that which was lost. Everyone is to have the armor on, prepared to win others to obedience to the law of God. I see so much given to those who already have. These wonderful meetings for those who wish to get more strength are depriving the world of the very work that should be done. Our ministers should now be working for the saving of the lost. The weeks spent in gatherings to fit men for work might better, far better, be spent in going to the highways and hedges with the proclamation, "Come, for all things are now ready." To those who obey the light they have, illumination will come from on high. For the heavenly messengers are waiting to cooperate with men in warning a deceived, sinful world. When the people of God engage in this work with real travail of soul, there will be manifest a decided change in cities and villages. This hovering about churches to keep them propped up makes them more dependent on human effort. They learn to lean on the experience of their fellow men and do not make God their dependence and their efficiency. It is time that cities and villages everywhere were hearing the solemn note of warning, "Behold, he cometh with clouds, and every eye shall see him. Get ready, that you may be found of him in peace." I entreat you, whom God has favored with a knowledge of the truth, go to work. There is work to do everywhere. The fields are all white unto the harvest. Sowers and reapers are needed just now. The time you devote to imparting constantly to those who understand the message of warning will not give one tithe of the strength which they would receive in taking hold of the work to communicate life to to save perishing souls. Angels are waiting to bless the consecrated workers. The parable of the lost sheep should be a lesson to every soul who has been rescued from the snare of Satan. We are not to hover over the 99, but to go forth to save the lost, hunting them up in the wilderness of the large cities and towns. In this work, the laborers will be led to feel their weakness, and they will flee to the stronghold. The divine presence will be with them to give strength and courage and faith and hope. The true-hearted workers will be laborers together with God. The warnings that Christ gave to Jerusalem were not to end with them. The judgments upon Jerusalem were a symbol of the events of Christ's coming to judgment in the last day, when before him shall be gathered all nations. He shall send forth his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other.
Every true follower of Christ has a work to do. God has given to every man his work. A few are now pointing to the role of fast fulfilling prophecy and proclaiming, "Get ready! Show your obedience to God by keeping his commandments." This is not time for the messengers of God to stop to prop up those who know the truth and who have every advantage. Let them go on to lift the standard and give the warning, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh. Go ye out to meet him." Many who hear the message, by far the greatest number, will not credit the solemn warning. Many will be found disloyal to the commandments of God, which are a test of character. The Lord's servants will be called enthusiasts. Ministers will warn the people not to listen to them. Noah received the same treatment while the Spirit of God was urging him to give the message, whether men would hear or whether they would forbear. Come when it may, the advent of Christ will surprise the false teachers who are saying, "Peace and safety, all things continue as they were from the beginning." Thus saith the word of inspiration, "Sudden destruction cometh upon them. The day of God shall come as a snare upon all who dwell upon the face of the whole earth." It comes to them as a prowling thief. If the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Habitual watching is our only safety. We must be ever ready that that day may not overtake us as a thief. Let everyone who loves God consider that now, while it is day, is the time to work, not among the sheep already in the fold, but to go out in search of the lost and perishing ones. These need to have special help to bring them back to the fold. Now is the time for the careless to arouse from their slumber. Now is the time to entreat that souls shall not only hear the word of God, but without delay, secure oil in their vessels with their lamps. That oil is the righteousness of Christ. It represents character, and character is not transferable. No man can secure it for another. Each must obtain for himself a character purified from every stain of sin. The Lord is coming in power and great glory. It will then be his work to make a complete separation between the righteous and the wicked. But the oil cannot then be transferred to the vessels of those who have it not. Then shall be fulfilled the words of Christ, "Two women shall be grinding together, the one shall be taken, and the other left. Two men shall be in the field, the one shall be taken, and the other left." The righteous and the wicked are to be associated together in the work of life. But the Lord reads the character. He discerns who are obedient children, who respect and love his commandments. The looker on may discern no difference, but there is one who said that the tares were not to be plucked up by human hands, lest the wheat be rooted up also.
Let both grow together until the harvest. Then the Lord sends forth his reapers to gather out the tares, and binds them in bundles to burn, while the wheat is gathered into the heavenly garner. The time of the judgment is a most solemn period, when the Lord gathers his own from among the tares. Those who have been members of the same family are separated. A mark is placed upon the righteous. They shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels. And I will spare them, as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Those who have been obedient to God's commandments will unite with the company of the saints in light. They shall enter in through the gates into the city, and have right to the tree of life. The one shall be taken. His name shall stand in the book of life, while those with whom he associated shall have the mark of eternal separation from God. The tares and wheat are now commingled, but then the one hand that alone can separate them will give to everyone his true position. Those who have had the light of truth and heard the warning message, heard the invitation to the marriage supper. Farmer, merchant, lawyer, false shepherds who have quieted the convictions of the people, unfaithful watchmen who have not sounded the warning or known the time of night. All who have refused obedience to the laws of the kingdom of God will have no right therein. Those who have sought an excuse to avoid the cross of separation from the world will, with the world, be taken in the snare. They mingled with the tares from choice. Like drew to like in transgression. It is a fearful assimilation. Men choose to stand with the first rebel who tempted Adam and Eve in Eden to disobey God. The tares multiply themselves, for they sow tares, and they have their part with the root of all sin, the devil.
Upon those who keep the commandments of God, the benediction is pronounced. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. They are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, an holy nation, a peculiar people, that they should show forth the praises of him who hath called us out of darkness into his marvelous light. The obedient are called the just. They are drawn to the holy magnet, Jesus Christ. The holy attracts the holy. He that is unjust will be unjust still. Character cannot then be made or transformed. The oil of grace cannot be lent by one to another. Neither have the foolish virgins time to buy oil for themselves. The righteous are those who keep the commandments of God, and they will be forever separated from the disobedient and unrighteous, who trampled underfoot the law of God. The pure ore and the dross will no longer commingle. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household? Can we answer? Am I the steward, faithful to the sacred trust which is committed to me? To every man is given an individual responsibility. The watchmen have their specific work to discern the approach of danger and sound the note of warning. The soldiers of the cross of Christ are to have ears keen to hear. In their position of responsibility, they are to give the trumpet a certain sound, that every one may gird on the armor for action. What work are we individually doing for the Master? Who are unfolding the truth to those who are in the darkness of error? Who are holding forth the words of life? The enemies of Christ are many who, while they claim to be righteous, have not the righteousness of Christ. They disguise themselves as angels of light, but they are ministers of sin. This fact should be sufficient to stir every soul to action. Who are faithful stewards of the grace of Christ?
who are making wise division of labor, calling into active service every soul that has an intelligent knowledge of the truth, and giving to all a work to do. The outposts are to be kept guarded. There are to be men to hold the fort, while the advancing forces are engaged in active warfare. To every man is given his work. We are not to echo the words of those in error, but to inculcate ideas of truth. Our work is to benefit our fellow men. We are not to travel over the track of opponents to the truth, but to sound the message of the third angel, who is flying in the midst of heaven, proclaiming the note of warning, the commandments of God, and the testimony of Jesus Christ. Those who are do-nothings now will have the superscription upon them, weighed in the balance and found wanting. They knew their master's will, but did it not. They had the light of truth, they had every advantage, but chose their own selfish interests, and they will be left with those whom they did not try to save. But, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, "My Lord delayeth his coming," and shall begin to smite his fellow servants, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Let there be an earnest consideration of these words. Let none say, "That does not mean me, I am a Christian." Who says this, yourself or he who reads the heart? The unfaithful steward had solemn responsibilities entrusted to him. Before the world be appeared as a servant of Christ, but oh, how deplorable for himself and for all connected with him, he is an evil servant. He is imperiling his Lord's goods. He is teaching souls to trample upon the holy law of God. He calls Christ "my Lord," but he says, "My Lord delayeth his coming." He does not say that Christ will not come. He does not scoff at the idea of his second coming. But he tells the people that his coming is delayed. He is removing from the minds of others the conviction that the Lord is coming quickly. His influence leads men to presumptuous, careless delay. Thus they are off their watch, and they echo the words of the unfaithful watcher. Still others catch them up, and the evil spirit, and men are confirmed in their worldliness and stupor. Their course is downward, not upward. They are not looking for and hasting unto the day of God. Earthly passions, corrupt thoughts, take possession of the mind. The evil servant smites his fellow servants who are seeking to do the will of his Lord. He eats and drinks with the drunken, those who are carnally minded, notwithstanding their profession of Christianity. They are opposed to Christ and the work he came to our world to do, which was to live the law of God in humanity, to be an example to all humanity.
Christ was surrounded by his disciples, and a vast congregation were listening to his words when he said, "Take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." A Sanitarium Chapel. I have received from Blank a letter of inquiry in reference to the building of a chapel for the sanitarium. I have written him that this proposition appears to me consistent. Years ago, I was shown that such a building should be erected. The teaching in the tabernacle is often too strong for babes. It is such advanced truth as is appropriate for those who have progressed step by step, but is not suited to those who have not a knowledge of the truth. The doctrinal discourses are not of a character to melt and subdue the heart. These souls need to be taught of Jesus Christ and Him crucified, of the sanctification of soul, body, and spirit, of the amazing love of God. In the simplicity and meekness and lowliness of Christ, let the word be spoken. The seekers after truth will inquire to know the reasons of our faith. They will desire that lessons be given upon the Sabbath question, and then the truth can be unfolded to them gradually as they are able to bear it. All who have a knowledge of the truth should realize their responsibility and be exceedingly careful to make straight paths for their own feet, lest the lame be turned out of the way. The very fact of having a church in connection with the sanitarium will give character to our work. It will be a testimony that we are seeking the eternal good of all who are brought within the sphere of our influence. The sanitarium presents a vineyard to be worked. It is God's vineyard, and it needs consecrated ability. Let not Pharisaism prevail. There are plenty of subjects to dwell upon to win hearts, and wisdom should be exercised by every teacher. All should remember that they are addressing people who have no knowledge of the third angel's message. It is Greek to them. Let those who have any part in connection with the sanitarium speak and act circumspectly. Continue in prayer, and watch in the same with thanksgiving, with all praying also for us, that God would open unto us a door of utterance, to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in bonds, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how ye ought to answer every man. Precious, precious words! Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, which has preserving qualities. Let the believers be sober, and watch unto prayer, and in everything represent Christ, but in the judgment they may meet the souls with whom they have been associated, and say, I have done for these souls all that I could do. The love of Christ dwelling in the heart will be revealed in the spirit and temper. The heavenly, sanctifying power can be indeed a savor of life unto life, quelling every tumultuous passion and winning souls to Christ. Oh, that love, the love of Jesus, might well up in the soul like a stream in the desert, refreshing all and winning many to the cross of Calvary. And the Lord shall guide thee continually and satisfy thy soul in drought and make fat thy bones. And thou shalt be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. Let those who make the outlay of means to build a house for God have proportionate zeal in winning souls to know God and Jesus Christ, whom He hath sent. Brother Blank, we should give much more labor to the souls that are out of Christ, the souls that have not the truth. Can we not consider that all who are disloyal to God and transgressing His holy law shall have no place in the paradise of God? How earnest should be the human agent that the truth in all its purity shall be proclaimed in cities, in villages, from the rivers to the ends of the earth. God help His people to awake, and give the trumpet a certain sound. Avondale, Currumbong, New South Wales, Australia, August 28, 1895. Dear Brother, you make inquiry in reference to building a chapel for the sanitarium to accommodate those who wish to attend religious services. The reasons you give in favor of building a chapel are sound. Years ago, I was shown that such a building would be a great help. Your patrons are mostly those not of our faith, and if anything can be done to interest them in religious things, it will be well. While there have been altogether too many buildings piled up at Battle Creek, which has meant simply robbery of other localities,
Yet I would not discourage the building of a chapel. A sanitarium, where people come from all parts of the world, is a missionary field in the highest sense, and a place of worship would be the means of drawing in some souls. I cannot see why the erection of such a building would not be to the honor of God, even though years have passed when it should have been done. True, there is the tabernacle, which is crowded every Sabbath. Why, some will say, will not that answer for all purposes? Why not let the people out and hear at the place of meeting? I answer that many would not go there at all, and those who might attend occasionally would not hear the things most appropriate for persons who are not of our faith. They do not understand the doctrines presented. If you have a place of meeting connected with the sanitarium, many will step in to while away the time, and discourses should be given appropriate for those who have not a knowledge of the truth. I have been surprised that such a building was not erected long ago. It is really a missionary enterprise. The chapel connected with the sanitarium at St. Helena, California, has been a great blessing. But I thought, as I read in your letter, that such a building would cost only dollars blank. Oh, if we could get such a house in some of our cities that have nothing, how glad we would be. But the patronage of the sanitarium would, it appears to me, justify the investment of means in a house for God's worship, where invalids would be accommodated without having to leave the buildings. They would realize much greater good from the services in such a place. I hope that none will consider these words as contradictory to the former testimonies I have borne, and feel at liberty to disregard the light that God has given. This counsel is in harmony with that light. Those who visit the sanitarium will see that it is a place where God is honored and worshiped, and many souls may hear the word of life, the precious truth of God, that otherwise might never hear the truth. The sick and suffering ones should have every advantage possible in religious facilities to win them away from the attractions of Satan to Jesus Christ. In the chapel, let the words of truth be spoken and the scriptures be opened to the people in simplicity. Reach the people with the gospel where they are. Jesus will be with you to impress minds and hearts. Nothing should be left undone that can be done to relieve these afflicted souls and win them to Jesus. Avondale, Currumbong, New South Wales, Australia, August 27th, 1895.